It's your boy Mookie.
And your favorite color is...
And we're the hosts of the 30 to Life podcast, where we break stereotypes, build legacies, and help others along the way.
Tune in every Friday for stimulating conversations about the Black experience and just everyday life. So how are you redefining your Black experience?
30 to Life is more than a podcast. It is an experience.
I'm not Superman no more.
Yeah, I'm back to being 100%. I'm getting old, man. I'm getting old and stuff like that. So I think I was still living as if I was in my 20s because I never get sick. My wife can get sick. My daughter can get sick, but I never would get sick, right? Like I had like this light Wolverine type of health, but you know, it slowed me down a month ago. So now, you know, I'm being more cautious and, you know, making sure that I'm always vitamin C'd up, take my daily vitamins, but now I make sure I take vitamin D, because I always, like, I think a lot of Black people are low on vitamin D, but
ain't no think it is.
I made sure, yeah, so I make sure I take that every day now. So how's everything on your end?
I was fat, man. I was 205 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And I...
Was that the most you ever weighed?
That was the most I ever weighed in my life. And okay. I was like, you know, I'm done with that.
How much did you weigh when you got married?
I was 187 when I got married.
Okay, so you were close to 20 pounds extra.
Yeah. And now I'm 172, which is where I was... Right out of high school.
172. Wait, so you had to get brand new clothes or like?
Yeah, I had to get a whole new wardrobe. I mean a lot of the stuff that I couldn't fit, I'm starting to wear now.
Okay.
So it's like it wasn't that bad because I wasn't wearing a lot of stuff, but now I can actually get into them, so it's cool. I feel good. I'm just happy to be out the matrix and seeing clearly and glad to be back, man. Healthy.
Wait, what was in the matrix? You're talking about because you had some extra weight or like...
Yeah. I say I was in the matrix because when you're unhealthy, when you're, you know, constantly eating unhealthily and you're not exercising, you're living a sedentary lifestyle, I feel like you're in the matrix. Like you're not really thinking as clearly as you could. You're not really performing as well as you could with anything. Versus when you are, you know, eating well and you're exercising frequently, you know, your body, I don't know, I think it's like similar to having superpowers, or you're unlocking or unleashing a new talent or gift. It's just, I just feel good and I don't want to ever go back to being in the matrix.
Yep. I feel you. I got a coach through my benefits that I was like, let me just use this, you know, that was rich account. So they're holding me accountable to work out 3 days a week. So
yeah, that's really all you need, man. Just that consistency, bro.
I just signed up for it last week for coaching. So, you know, 1 week ain't bad. Speaking of progress, you know, we had that discourse before we hit the record button, and you were talking about the Black family.
You know, everybody that has social media or that uses social media doom scrolls, right? And so I said, if I'm going to doom scroll, let me doom scroll and be productive with my doom scrolling, right? So yep. I came up with the idea of just, and I'm sure other people do this, but I came up with the idea that if I'm going to doom scroll, I'm going to look at things that are going to educate me. So I started to look at a lot of health stuff, obviously. But then if I get tired of the health stuff, I go to Black orators. And just so I can listen to what they have to say and learn and kind of gain different perspectives from opposing viewpoints. How I do it is I start off with past and I work my way up to present. So I might listen to 3 or 4 videos a day. For example, just yesterday I started off with Frederick Douglass. Then I went to like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and then I ended up with Candace Owens. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of people don't like Candace Owens, but but I actually
Martin
like
Martin Luther King to Candace Owens is crazy.
hey, but to me that's beautiful because it's like it's a diversity of thought, and you know, it's a diversity of style. I mean, to me, I'm just getting, you know, a well-rounded view of different viewpoints. And you know, and I like Candace Owens. I'm not going to lie. Like, she, you know, I don't agree with everything she says, but I agree with a lot of what mm-hmm. she says. I do think that she might lean on facts a little too much, because I feel like facts can't be the only argument for everything. Mm-hmm. I do think you have to consider human behavior. Not to say she doesn't, but I think there's a lot of other factors that you need to include before you make a stone cold hard judgment about
yep,
something.
I agree.
She offers an opposing view, which I think helps everyone, because you're getting multiple sides of a viewpoint and you're getting a lot of information, so you can make a more informed decision. To make a long story short, she goes on and she discusses Thomas. Huh?
Yeah. Before you go to Thomas Hall, Candace Owens, right?
So I know yeah.
some people may be listening, like, you like Candace Owens?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give my viewpoint on it. So I think Candace Owens, yeah, I agree with you that she tends to focus on statistics, mm-hmm. and you can take statistics and do anything with it if you just yeah. find the right data points, right? So,
yeah.
But a lot of the points that she says, under all of the shock jock or like the headlines that she kind of leads with, and like you'll learn about her from, underneath all of that, like some of the points that she makes, I agree with, but. Yeah. A lot of the headline stuff that she does, I don't agree with. Like, it'd yeah. just be some stuff where it's like, do you even like black people? Like, yeah. the stuff that she says. So it's like,
yeah.
it's, you know, when you don't like someone, like, it don't matter if they preaching facts. Like, you're just not, you know, people are just not going to like that person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Trump's example. Trump can say, you know, the something, and because of his personality and the things that he said at a headline level, people will never like want to listen to him as a fact of it. And I think Candace Owens does that a lot too, right? Like, and yeah. but if you're able to look beyond that and listen to some of her long form conversations,
she right, drops knowledge.
You can get to that point, right? But most people, I would say, are not like that, right? Once they hear something that you say that they don't like, they're not gonna look beneath the surface to see, like, you know, was this just a viral clip or something? Mm-hmm. They're not gonna do that. But yeah, I can agree with your opinion of her, right? But I think on the surface, like, some people can't get behind
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah. She's not for everybody, and like you said, it's the delivery, I think, for the most part, mm-hmm. and how much yep. of that delivery is her brand. You know, how much of it is to, you know, get people to watch her stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of it. I mean, she's a businesswoman as well. But I think, like you said, she does say some truthful things that should make every black person go, hmm, you know, and not so much be offended, but to be like, hmm, you know, just think about it.
And cause you to find someone else that may not be Candace Owens, but someone else who goes a little bit deeper in terms of that actual
right.
topic, right? Like, she right. always brings up the welfare state. So it may be like, hey, let me find someone else who talks about it a little bit more
right.
that I can palette what they're saying, right? Because sometimes, you know, blunt truth, people don't like to hear the blunt truth. Sometimes right. they want it like massage and yeah. and polish before yeah. they say it, right? So yeah
and that's why I like to listen to different orators, because you're getting different, it's like different flavors. Some people prefer that straightforward, that stone hard cold truth, and then I think, you know, people like Martin Luther King, they use the poeticness, if that's even a word, of their words to kind of get their point across. And, you know, you have like Muhammad Ali, who added a lot of humor into it. Mm-hmm. But that, and then you had like Malcolm X, who kind of did everything. So, you know, so she goes on to talk about Thomas Sowell, right? And, you yep. know, Thomas Sowell is one of our great black, brilliant thinkers, and not a lot of people like him, but again, he's one of those people that, you know, he has a lot of good information and things that make you go hmm. So anyway, long story short, you know, he talks about how the welfare state is really the culprit of the black family, and it's not so much racism, but it was those institutionalized programs like the welfare state. He goes on to discuss like the black family and how it's really not a factual statement to say that the black family isn't economically stable, it's single households really don't do well versus the married Black families that have both their parents in their house consistently and able to raise their children. And that corresponded to the family values, right? When you have two parents in the house, the dollar is more likely to have a value foundation that can propel them to move forward. Versus the other, the contrast, right? And, you know, that got me to thinking, like, what are some core family values that will push us to the next 100 years that'll bring us to a place of social success and economic success? And, you know, I thought about definitely the family, you know, having the family unit is one. Having a family unit, you know, will essentially make you more money, and you know your kids will essentially have a better opportunity. So what are some other things besides the I guess the family unit, like what are some other values I guess that I wanted to kind of explore and discuss?
Yeah, so one, I think most people would agree that two-parent households in general, right, or from a national standpoint, perform, children have better outcomes across the board, right? Like that's like statistical evidence, right? And it just, I mean, from a logistics standpoint, or like, you know, like if you have two people in the household, right, it's more likely someone's watching the child, right? At least one yeah. person's in there. There's, if both are working, like there's two levels of income, right? So you're not paying for like the rent or the mortgage by yourself. You have someone helping out with that, right? There's just so many things that's beneficial to it, right? I'm a product of a two-parent household. Brown, you are as well. So like we knew the benefits of it compared to like our neighborhood, right? Like where some people may have been single parent households and you could just see like the differences, right? Like yeah. our parents made sure like we didn't get ourselves into trouble, right? It was just, you know, a structured household, right? Mm-hmm. Where maybe it was different than other households. So back to the values, have a religious foundation. I think that's really important from a moral standpoint, right? To have values, right? If, you know, if you're Muslim or, you know, Jewish or Christian, all of these religions have like a basis for like being disciplined to God and like being a moral person, right? Yeah. Like, you know the Ten Commandments, you know, different things, love your neighbor, all these different things that we have, right? And the discipline that comes with it, right? I think that's important, right? Because then you're looking at something beyond just yourself. You're looking at, you know, to God. I think there was a study that was done that showed like having religion as a foundation, right, will put you on a better path, right? Some people find like religion in their like 30s, 40s, and they will, a lot of times they wish that they had like this religious foundation when they were younger. And some people have the religious foundation, maybe lose it and then gain it back at a later life. But having a religious foundation is one of the things that, you know, these households tend to have in common.
Religion has held families, the Black families together, especially in America for, you know, a while. I mean, whether it be Christianity or Islam, I think those are the, one of the two major religions that have kind of established a lot of core family values. Myself included, like my grandfather was a pastor, my grandmother was an evangelist. So, you know, I spent a lot of my early childhood in church. And so, you know, a lot of the values that I had about family and about God and about morality and ethics came from that in my life. Even if you're a family that isn't so much pressed on the concept of religion, I think that you can kind of say, you know, okay, let's talk about spirituality and what is your commitment to the greater good of the world, right? And I think that also can kind of give someone a sense of removal of their ego and kind of think about other people and kind of be, not philanthropic, but I guess just selfless, right? To me, we had more of a sense of community, right? And I don't think that we've ever experienced it, but we've heard stories from our parents that, you know, this person down the block might have given us this when we had hard times, or, you know, this person was really good at cooking this, so they might have known that this person was sick and they were giving them food. That sense of community was more rich then.
Yeah, I was reading an article, and then it was attached to a long form podcast that kind of explained, you know, not just in the Black community, but just in general, why society is further apart than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And it's based on like where we are as far as like the economy, right, as a whole, right? Right before, we had most of the way that the economy worked was through like farming, right?
Yeah.
Then it went to like industrial, right? So factories, mm-hmm. right? And you had to kind of be communal at that point, right?
Yeah.
And then now we're like in like the internet age or the digital age. So you don't really have to work with someone to like create, right?
Yeah.
Right. When it's the farm, right? You create it. I mean, you grow your food, you work on the farm, right? Everyone shared the food, right? It was like communal, right?
Yeah.
Then industrial with the factories, right? You live close to that factory, you worked at the factory, you came home,
yep.
right? The mother stayed home most of the time. Mm-hmm. But now, in like this digital age, it's like so different, right? Like you could work from anywhere. You know, you don't need someone, right? Like you know, you hear women say it all the time. You hear guys say it all the time, right? It's no longer like,
yeah.
like you were like codependent on each other, right? Or interdependency yeah. on each other, which has changed that. So mm-hmm. it also is based upon technology and where the economy is like driven at, throughout like history.
Yeah, yeah. There's this Japanese concept that I really enjoy, and it's called Ikigai. And basically, to make a long story short, I'm probably not going to explain it the best, but it's about finding your passion, right? Finding something that you're really good at, something that really makes you happy, and work towards that every day, right? And I think that that's honestly a value that I maybe not have said it that exact way to my kids or say it that exact way to my family, but it's definitely something that I would like to, you know, see implemented in all of our Black American households, because once you begin to kind of look and see what you're passionate about, I think that's kind of like when your life begins. And then once you kind of earn the midnight oil and work hard at perfecting it, I think, you know, eventually you become legendary at something, right? And I imagine if every Black family household did that, how much further would we be in our pursuit to greatness, you know?
I gotta push back with that one.
Please.
And the reason why I'm pushing back on it is because I feel like today, every millennial, every Gen Zer is told to follow your passion.
Okay.
And I think the previous generations was just basically work hard, don't complain, and, you know, at least for men, provide, right? Or like, it was like, whatever you're doing, you got to be good at it.
Yeah.
The problem now is like, if someone doesn't like something, they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like an issue for our generation, not all, but the Gen Zers, like, I see it. Like, it's just like, I got to get a job. I don't like this, so I'm not going to work hard at it, right? Or I'm going to complain about it, where I think generations, or even like when me and you were working, when we were like in high school, like we wasn't like, oh my God, I got to work. We were kind of excited that we were working, right? Like we like, you know,
yeah.
But now I know like a 16-year-old, you say work at McDonald's, they're like, I'm not working at McDonald's. I'm too good for that, right? Like we had like that millennial entitlement once we got out of college, right?
Yeah.
I think the next generation has it like teenager status, right? And I think that's detrimental to like becoming a responsible, like disciplined, like contributor to society.
Right.
I remember I heard these parents arguing with their son, right? He had to be like in his, like maybe like 24 or 23, right out of college. And he's arguing with them. He's like, don't tell me to get a job. I know I need to get a job, but I don't have to look right now. Like, you got to show me some compassion or whatever, right? And I was just like, who is this kid talking to his parents like that? He's like, I'll get a job when I find what's right for me, and what I love, right? And I was just like, this is crazy that kids act like this, right? Like, you're in their household, they're paying for everything, and but you're arguing about, I need to find what I love. So I think it needs to be refined to like, hey, you need to go into STEM and find something in STEM that you love, right? Like, not on this like open canvas, figure it out, right? Because we have all these degrees, but it's not primarily focused in STEM, and STEM is where you make the most money. We need to be more concise with the majors that we need to do, and you need to find love within those majors that you can only select.
So, yeah, I agree with that part, because you know I feel like there are a lot of majors out there that are pointless. When I say pointless, I mean I feel like the school took your money because you know you're not going to get a decently paying job afterwards. So trust me, like I believe that, but I also believe that to wake up every day and to live this life, you got to find something that you're passionate about. Now, granted, I do believe that it needs to be something practical. Like what you're saying, so if you're going to school, going to college, yes, do your research, find what jobs pay decently or pay a decent wage that you can go major in that you enjoy. Yeah, I agree with that. But I'm talking about your true passion in life, right? I'm talking about something totally deeper. For instance, you have, what's that movie? The Venus and Serena movie about their dad.
King Richard.
Okay. Like, so maybe not so much a Venus, but Serena. Like, you know, Serena, I got Serena really wanting to be a tennis superstar. Like, I got that from Venus, but I got it more so from Serena. I felt like she wanted it from a deeper level, right? So that was, to me, her passion, right? And she didn't let anything, not even her dad, stop her from getting to where she wanted to go. So she worked at her passion every day. She figured out creative ways to still achieve her goals despite her challenges and obstacles. So that's what I mean. Like, I feel like that's not essentially discussed enough in our community and in our homes. I mean, I know it wasn't discussed really in mine. Like, mine was just, you know, make sure you go to school, get a good job, not find something that you're passionate about and be the best at it. Work at it every day. And I think, yes, still have those opportunities that when you go to school and, you know, if you go to college, you find a major, find majors that pay well, do that whole process, make sure you like it, obviously, and have that, I guess, I don't want to say a plan B or a backup plan, but just have that as a foundation. But I also think that you need to figure out what your purpose is in this world. And, you know, that to me should be your passion. Like, what are you going to give back to humanity? I think that should be, you know, a conversation that you have with your kids at an early age. So they're thinking about it early.
But you also have to recognize what you're good at. That's why I think saying the blanket to, like, pursue your passion. People could be passionate about playing basketball, but if they're not good at it, why are they putting all this time into it, right? So that's what I was like. And I think more where I'm pointing towards is, like, it's obviously it's on the parents, right, to make sure, like, they instill, like, recognize what the child is good at and mixing that with what they actually like to do, right? So like, you know, if my daughter, like, I was talking to my daughter today and she's like, she wants to be a doctor, right? And I was asking her what type of doctor she wanted to do and everything like that, right? And she likes to pretend doctor, right? And I could see it. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, if she wants to be a doctor and, you know, she has, you know, the fake needles and, you know, heart monitors and all stuff like that. So, like, I'm looking at it as, okay, she likes this. She likes to play doctor, but does she actually love it? Does she like, you know, studying or learning or pursuing things, right? And she does, right? So it's like, okay, me now, today I was just thinking, okay, what do I need to do to put her on the track to become a doctor, right? But that's fortunate for her that I'm gonna, you know, think about this, you know, all the time and figure it out. But for someone who doesn't have any direction, right, to just say, follow your passion, like, I think we need to get more concise, specifically in our community, right? Because everyone, community standards, like, go to college, right? But you can't just go to college, right?
And then also,
and then also, pandemic, everyone's like, become an entrepreneur, right? Yeah. Like, the biggest thing on the thing, like, you're stupid for having the 9-to-5. So, yeah. Right? Like, look at this recession and inflation. Everybody's like, yeah, dang, I wish I had a job now. You know, so it's just like, I think the better thing is you need to figure out your passion and what you're good at and combine the two.
Yeah. And then, having the conversation with your kids and trying to have it early. But you mentioned something that I think is actually paramount. You said you had to recognize, like you had to be aware and mindful of it. And I think because we get so busy, because we have all these things going on in our lives, because we're have to be responsible, I feel like we can easily forget and not see those things in our children. And you have to be aware of what they're good at and maybe expose them to more of those things to kind of bring different things out. But that also costs money, and you know, it's a privileged thing as well.
yes. That is 100% true, because my daughter, she's good at math, so we're putting her like a math tutoring, right? I didn't have that opportunity growing up, right, to have the math tutoring. So it's just like with the advice, right, that we're trying to give, right? Like, it's coming from like a two-parent household perspective, right? So it's just like, it's like, what is really like
practical for everyone?
Practical, yes. And practical would be, I think like what you were reiterating earlier, what I had said is recognize what they're good at, right? Because then you can focus on that as like the theme for your child throughout the years that you're raising them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it may just be like, oh, let's say they want to become a doctor. Oh, maybe I should introduce them to a couple of doctors. Mm-hmm. Let them talk to like maybe their pediatrician, maybe talk to their dentist, maybe talk to what other? Those only two that really kids see. But, you know, talking to them, getting to know them, learning more about it, reading them doctor books. I mean, like things that are practical, that, you know, expensive. So like, you know, the child has more exposure to what they say that they enjoy.
Exactly. So another thing that I think really, and honestly, to me, this should be number one, but a good diet and exercise program. I think, you know, just from doing my own research recently, you know, humans are meant to move, right? We are meant to be active people, and diet and exercise, you know, well, let me ask you, how much did your parents teach you about diet and exercise growing up? Like the importance of it and how it's necessary for your existence as a human.
I think I was told to drink water.
Right.
And, you know, those type of things. But yeah, as far as like working out, no.
Right.
I mean, you know, playing sports, I think that's what they, you know, parents throw all their kids into. And diet, no, not much conversation regarding
right.
it. Or I guess health or wellness, no. Just no deep discussions regarding it.
And that's no fault to your parents. That's no fault to any of our parents. And that was two family household. They just didn't know, right? And so I that's why I like to, I don't know, for me, like I take a lot of opportunity to, you know, go through all the fruits with my kids. I explain to my daughter, she probably hates it by this point, but I'm, you know, I'm constantly talking to her about processed foods. You know, and then the fact that they see me exercise consistently, I think is super important, because they're seeing that habit that they can kind of replicate and, you know, do when they get older. And so I just think that, you know, if we have more conversations and take more time with our children and discuss the dangers of foods, discuss the importance of exercising regularly. You know, we're not only helping ourselves by doing those things, but they're also, to me, they have the energy and in the body and the vitality to live their best lives, right? Yeah, I just think that's a value that we have to bring forward.
That's also coming from a
a privilege, yeah. Yeah. Two family privilege, yeah, it is.
So then that brings me back, right? We continue these values, but we were talking about like racism and like this multifaceted equation. Mm-hmm. But what I learned is that is not as much a racism problem, it's more of a like a class problem.
You know, that's how capitalism works. It works by keeping the lower class, you know, disadvantaged to be exploited by the 1%.
And the middle class, I mean, pays for it all. And I mean, basically, you know, the 1% is the top income or net worth individuals in most countries, right? They're the one who will thrive, especially in capitalism. And the middle class is the one like footing the bill, right? Yeah. And so it's just wanted to point that out. But back to the values, right? Very important is to know your history. I think every Black household needs to teach their kids their history and not let the schools teach the kids their history. That should be a part of the culture, right? Like, we should have Black schools that just like teach you, right? Like, I don't know, Black daycares or whatever that teach the kids to, you know, at least adolescence, right? Where they learn about everything of our history. Because that's very important to have throughout your life, is to know your history, where you come from, the values associated with that history, and how are you going to add to that history through your lifetime, right? And by time they are the age 13 or 18, like, they know their entire history. They have a value system attributed to it, and they go into the world knowing who they are, and no one else can tell them any different.
To add to that, if you're trying to be practical and you want to start, don't just start from Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. I think you got to go back a couple of 100,000 years. And I think once you do that, you learn of the richness of Black
kings and
culture.
Queens.
Yeah, you learn of just the amazingness of how things were. And although we don't have that same, I guess, life that they might have had when they were, I guess, rulers and kings and queens, I think that it's a reminder of where we can be if we work together to get to that point. I know that sounds cliche, but I mean, I honestly believe it. I'm happy you mentioned the whole history thing, because I mean, I didn't even think of that, but it's so true, because you can't get to where you want to go unless you know where you used to be. I used to think that my history started from slavery times, and that for me just never made me feel good, never made me feel powerful, never gave me a sense of pride. In hindsight, you know, I do know that they did 400 years. It took strength, took just a lot. But back when I was younger, it didn't give me that sense of pride that I, you know, I wish I had.
Exactly. Yep. And that'll be, you know, your source of power throughout your life. Yeah. That, right. We shouldn't teach our kids that we started from slavery, right? Like, they shouldn't believe that, right? And I think we all had those beliefs or foundations at some point, and then, you know, you're like, you learn, right? You know, credit to like my pops. My pops had, you know, my pops is Muslim, and he always had me like reading like Malcolm X and all these, you know, different books when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, and you start to realize. I remember I had an encyclopedia of like all the like Black inventors and stuff like that, and you're like, oh wow, like we did a lot, right? And you know, you start to feel empowered through that. So I think it's so important, right? We should all teach our kids our history, and you know, so they can pass that on, right? Like, why lose that? And a lot of schools to teach them stuff that's like half truths and stuff. So that's important. And then follow up was a value, that your last name is more important than your first name. Today, a lot of people is like, be me, me. And I think you have to like honor the people before you, right? Which could be your parents, grandparents, and what they did to get you in a place where you are now, right? Like anyone who is like alive now, right, is in a better place than their great grandparents were, at the very least, right? And you should acknowledge that, right? You shouldn't want to bring any, let's say, for lack of a better word, shame to your family name, right? Like, it should always be like, I want to put my name, my last name, on the top, right? Like, people know, like, oh, that's John Smith's boy. Like, we know them. We know what they're capable of. We know what their family does. Yeah. Like, right? Like, you want that when someone hears your last name, right? Like, oh, I knew your dad. He did this, right? And you want your children to do that and pass it on, right? And so whenever you're making the decision, it's like, is this reflective of, like, my last name, my family, the values that we associated with it, right? Because if you act from an individual standpoint, it's like, oh, I deserve this, or I need to do this, or it doesn't matter what, you know, that is, then, you know, sometimes you get yourself in trouble. Obviously, it's balanced, right? Because you create your own destiny in it, but it's, I think it's within, like, your family values, right?
Yeah.
So, and you see a lot of cultures, right, that have that, right? Like, when you come in, it's your last name, then your first name, right? Like, and I think that's important to have that perspective in things you do. I know at times I had that, and it may be a little bit different, and it probably was from a standpoint, it's like, you know, I don't want to disappoint, like, my father, right? And but that's still in the same thing of, like, your last name, right? Where it's like, I want my parents to be proud of me, right? And it goes around that whole, like, your last name theme.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. It's like you're representing your family every time you walk out the house. Like, at least that's what my mom used to tell me. She used to say, you know, you're representing your family anytime you walk out this house. So make sure you know you look at decent, make sure you know you're acting accordingly. To end, I think the last thing that I would like to highlight, and I know you'll appreciate this one, is a budget. How to budget and how to invest. And investing and then saving early. So that whole thing, I wasn't taught that until I got older. But I think, you know, learning it at a young age and making it instilled in your child that it's important to budget, that they know how to budget, that they know how to save, how much they should save, how much they should invest, and when they should do it, when is a good time to invest, when is not a good time to invest. If you're a parent, you might be saying, well, I don't know that, you know, I don't know how to do that. As someone who didn't know, you know, it's okay to try to take your journey to figure it out so you can teach them, you know. Not saying it's going to be an easy journey, not saying it's not going to take you a long time, but I think that, you know, if you're looking for the progression of yourself and your family, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not learning how to do those things, not learning how to budget and invest.
In my early 20s, like, if I took care of my finance, well, I'm still young, but, like, if I took care of my credit, right, I would have saved myself hundreds of dollars, like, when I got my first car, right? Like, and unfortunately, the mistakes that I made, right, I was able to fix them, but a lot of people never, like, recognize, like, hey, I need to, like, fix my credit, right? Because someone who has, like, good credit, right, and they get a car, their interest may be 0%, right?
Yeah.
And my first car was almost 10%, right? And you look at that and you're just like, I just lost pay my car off, like, in, like, less than 4 years. I missed out on all that extra money that could have been either gone towards paying off my student loans, or, you know, saving that and investing in something like that, right? Yeah. And but that time, imagine if it went to today, right?
Yeah.
Like 10 years later or something like that, that would have cost me even more, right? And it'd be less that I can give to my daughter. So even if today you're like, hey, I'm drowning, I have bad credit, or I don't budget or anything, you just need to, like, start, learn, right? Like, there's podcasts, there's books, there's, you know, just the act of, like, knowing, rip the band-aid off, knowing all your numbers, like how much money is in your accounts, how much debt you have, what is the interest rates, and just seeing that for the first time. And that's a bigger step than most people in this country, right? A lot of people don't know their numbers, right? Like, where they are today, right? So it's important that you not only pass on generational wealth to your kids, but also generational knowledge, right? And that's the part of the financial literacy or education part, right? The health part, the knowing their history part, to having family values installed with them. It's so important to have those.
Yeah, yeah. If we do those things, I think those are some pretty good values that we can start off with to kind of, you know, try to spread and try to implement them within your own families and in your own lives. You said just start. I think that's honestly with a lot of different things, you know, that's you'll take your first couple of steps and, you know, keep going. I think there's a quote from one of my favorite books, The Alchemist, and it's like all the universe conspires to, you know, your dreams and your desires. And it's really true. Like, once you start doing something, the universe will kind of start putting people in your path and books in your path and thoughts in your brain. Like, it's really interesting how it works. So yeah, just start, you know, it's not too late. And if you aren't from a two-family household, or if you're listening to this and you're a single parent, hats off to you. When I have my son for a couple of hours by myself, it's rough. So hats off to all the single parents out there and yes, the single moms and dads.
Single moms, single dads.
Keep hope alive.
Yes.
And still, like, try to implement this into your families as well. I mean, I know
100% they can. I see all the time single parents like thriving and stuff, yeah, right? And I think it goes back to what you said earlier, is like, you know, it takes a village, right? And like incorporating, you know, if a father or a mother is not in the household, right, then having that mother figure or that father figure, either that's through grandparents or aunts, uncles, or something of that, helps contribute to that, right? And having that neighborhood feel, right, of looking out for one another, right, and just being mindful of different things. So, you know, there's like single households that are also thriving as well, but you know, it comes with having that values and going through a lot of the steps that we kind of discussed as well, and focusing on the ones that are most important to you and your family. So definitely agree. But lastly, before we end, I just want to say, also very important, I think, is committing to one person, I think, is very important. Like, you know, one thing, a commonality between me and you is that, you know, we love our wives, right? And we're committed to one woman. And I think that's in society today, and we'll probably talk about this next episode, but like the importance of like marriage, right? A lot of times it's like, I could do bad all by myself. I don't need a man. Oh, I need a woman. But like, you need each other, right? There's interdependency or interdependence between each other, right? Where you can do things independently, but doing it together, you're much stronger, right? Yeah. Two is better than one. They say it all the time. And, you know, you can go much further together than apart. So that's my last one. This was another long episode, and we appreciate you guys for listening to 30 to Life podcast, redefining the Black experience. It's your boy Mookie.
And your favorite color in the world,
brown. 30 to Life, we out.